McKenzie et al. Versus Virginia. David Bailey, Tammy Belinsky, Appellants Counsel, Charles Setliff, Dov Zigo, Eli Mackey, John Walk, Andrew Sherrod, Elizabeth Burnison, Appellees Counsel.
Mr. Walk, are you going to argue for the appellees?
This is John Walk. I am Appellees Counsel, yes.
All right. All right, Mr. Bailey, you're free to proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is David Bailey. I'm with the Environmental Law Group. I represent the appellants in this case, Donna and Sarah McKenzie. I will not reserve any time at this stage. I prefer to make sure that I've answered all the questions of the court. If everyone is done and a minute or two is left, then I'll take a hold of that. As the court knows, this case alleges the improper installation, operation, maintenance of a smart meter transmission device by the appellee VEPCO. This is an appeal from a trial court decision granting a plea and bar on conflict preemption. The smart meter is an FCC-regulated device that transmits radio frequency signals from a house to a nearby tower and is relayed by VEPCO for remote billing purposes. This complaint asserts that the smart meter was improperly installed and that the FCC has guidance on how close the smart meter may be installed next to operating computer devices and individual workstations. The installation issue is separate from the FCC emission regulations. While all radio frequency devices must meet the emissions limit set by the FCC, the FCC has no specific limits or standards for installation requirements. Installation, rather, is controlled by the user, in this case, VEPCO, but is subject to the same guidance from the FCC with regard to location and distance. As stated in our brief, the FCC guidance provides limits on the location of radio frequency devices next to computer systems. In fact, the FCC specifically suggests a site evaluation of the location of the smart meter if the device is located in proximity to other computer devices. That was not done in this case. Appellants assert that if the device was improperly sited, it would be in nonconformance with FCC rules. Furthermore, if the radio frequency device is improperly located, the potential for harm exists even if the device meets FCC emission rules, which is why this case is not a challenge to the FCC emission rule. Our second issue in particular is that VEPCO, after constant complaints of illness by the Kinsey, attempted to disable the
Go ahead. We lost one. Came back. Go ahead.
All right. As I said, there are many cases on conflict preemption, and we've cited a lot in our briefs. The appellees have cited a number in their brief. This court, as well as most other courts, have looked at this issue in, I believe, the following general manner and apply pretty much the same criteria. First, does the applicable federal law or regulatory authority even permit the kind of claim that's brought in this case in any form? The answer here is yes. There are savings clauses for common law claims. There's nothing in the FCC rule or the applicable federal law that absolutely bars this kind of claim. Otherwise, it would just be preemption as a matter of law. Second, if we get past that hurdle, the courts tend to ask whether the cause of action directly confronts an issue controlled exclusively or within the exclusive ambient of the federal law or agency, such that it just inherently conflicts. The answer here is no, and the reason we say no is because the FCC does not regulate the installation, operation, or maintenance of smart meters. In fact, There is a state law which specifically makes that the duty of VEPCO. And there's no argument in this case that that state law is in conflict with the FCC. Third and finally, the courts tend to look to whether a jury could find for the plaintiff without interfering with an existing FCC rule or authority, or somehow tainting or making it impossible for the FCC to continue to regulate smart meters in the Commonwealth. And the answer to that is yes, a jury could find that if the installation was done improperly, it was not adequate spacing, and it violated the guidance by the FCC, and there was no site evaluation, then the plaintiff's injuries could have stemmed from the very beginning when this device was installed on their home. So that's the way that I condense the multitude of cases that deal with conflict preemption. Now, this is a conflict preemption case. As the court knows, the burden is upon VEPCO to prove preemption. I remind the court that the federal court in the Western District of Virginia has already concluded that there was no preemption in this case and remanded it back to state court. VEPCO's argument, as I understand it, endorsed by the trial court, attempts to cast plaintiff's complaint as a challenge to the FCC regulatory limits on smart meter admissions, either directly or indirectly, by alleging that they weren't operating correctly, then they must have been beyond the emission limits, and therefore the case must be about health effects occurring within the emission limits approved by the FCC. The trial court essentially held that there could be no case without asserting a violation of the FCC limits. In other words, unless we came to trial and proved that the FCC emission limits were violated, we could not prove harm to the plaintiff. And as I've already said, the improper installation too close to the person, too close to the other computer device, and without a site evaluation could be cause in itself for harm, even if the FCC limits were complied with.
That's because you have at least one of the people living in that house that was 2 feet away from the site of installation.
But less than 2 feet. And the workplace, it was Donna Kinsey's workplace, right next to the wall, with a desk, everything right up against the wall. The smart meter device was on the opposite side of the wall. So you got the distance between 2x4 studs and some drywall, it gets right to her desk. Sarah Kinsey, who is a student, also worked at that same desk. So that's the physical relationship, Your Honor.
All right, can you give us the paragraph numbers of the complaint? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Chief Justice.
Well, let me ask you this question. Do you rely upon the savings clause in Section 414, or do you think you prevail without it?
You're talking about the common law savings clause?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it's very well established that, yes, the common law savings clause is there. But because it's there, doesn't mean automatically that you still can't have a conflict. So we rely on the common law negligence and fraud claims that we have made, and we think that they are appropriate in this case because a decision on those common law elements does not preempt or interfere with the program of the FCC. If they did, if this court were to find that they would interfere, then it wouldn't matter that they were there.
May I ask you this? Your argument on appeal is bad installation, defective meter, and they needed to do a look at where they were installing it. do a pre-site exam or whatever. Give me the paragraph numbers where that theory is laid out, because I have to say, reading this complaint, it looked an awful lot like the complaint was directed at the emissions from these devices as opposed to what you're now arguing.
There are issues in the complaint regarding whether there can be health effects from emissions of radio frequencies. And obviously, something we will have to prove, that even if the device was installed improperly and the device operated correctly, could you still have harm? And that's part of the evidence we would have to present. But in terms of the complaint you're talking about, in Sarah's complaint, there is a specific, I think it's number 17, I believe, there is a specific complaint, allegation, that says VEPCO did not properly install, operate, and maintain. Now, that's a statement by itself. So you have to look to the previous allegations before that to make sure there are sufficient allegations to support that generalized statement. In Donna Kinsey's case, there is no one paragraph that says VEPCO failed to properly install, operate, and maintain. But if you look at the allegations in the complaint, it clearly says, in very many different ways, that that's what VEPCO did. So there was an issue with the court about whether we should amend the complaint, and we decided to rest on the complaint as it's filed. I think looking at the whole complaint, the court will find that there's adequate information there for the allegations. And that's kind of the way that went, Your Honor.
Counsel, can you give us off the top of your head, and if not, not a big deal, we'll look it up, what specific paragraphs you are pointing to when you say that the generalization looks back to the earlier statements in Sarah Kinsey's that talks about installation, operation, or maintenance? So you allude that there are some. Without wasting a lot of time, can you just give us the paragraph sites?
To give you those paragraph sites, I will have to go to my brief.
Okay, so I can get it from the brief. You continue the argument.
We did cite those in the brief because the trial court kind of raised that issue too. I made sure that we put in the brief those paragraphs in which we relied upon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to emphasize with the final minute or two that I have the fact that VEPCO, under our state law, existing state law, and we cited that in the brief, and not excluded by the FCC, because the FCC rules also say the obligation for an installation, operation, and maintenance is upon the user. The FCC doesn't get involved with that. So this is all about VEPCO's duties and what their responsibilities were to protect these people by proper installation, operation, and maintenance. Keep in mind, the Kinseys never had the opportunity to communicate with VEPCO. This device was put on the home in secret by an experiment that VEPCO was conducting. So there was no communication about, should the meter be 10 feet over here? Should there be a barrier behind it? Any of the normal things which VEPCO might have done and usually does do now. So all of that was just avoided. And we rely on VEPCO's duty, not constrained or removed by the FCC, to do their job to protect these people in the installation of this device. And I see that I have 30 seconds left. If there are any questions by the court, otherwise, thank you very much, Your Honor.
All right. Mr. Walk.
Thank you. May it please the court, John Walk here on behalf of VEPCO. I'm going to skip right into the meat of the argument by Mr. Bailey, specifically the idea that the FCC has not regulated the installation of smart meters. The FCC order, which is cited in our brief, it is FCC order 19-126. It was issued shortly before the plea and bar hearing, speaks directly to these contentions. Specifically, his complaint that he has articulated here today is that there was improper spacing of the meter, that it was installed too close to Donna Kinsey's workplace. In that regard, I'm going to give you a couple of sites to check out. First of all, the FCC most definitely does regulate the spacing of all RF emission sources, and this would include smart meters. These are baked into the regulations, which can be found at 47 CFR 1.1307 and 1.1310. Now, admittedly, if you look at those regulations, you're going to see a very complex mathematical formula that, unless you're a physicist or an engineer, you're probably not going to fully understand. So I want to give you one more site that is going to be hugely helpful in this regard. In the FCC order at paragraph 42, you will find a chart where the FCC distilled this algorithm down into a chart where on the vertical axis is frequency, on the horizontal axis is separation distance, and then you connect those two lines and that gives you the permitted wattage that the device can operate at. So the three parameters that the FCC specifically regulates in respect to all RF emission sources, wattage, frequency, and spacing. And in this case, the FCC order specifically says at paragraph 29 that the measurements for smart meters are based upon a separation distance of 20 centimeters, which is about 7 inches. So per Mr. Bailey's concession, and this is also stated in the complaint here at paragraph 70, a separation distance of 2 feet greatly exceeds the separation that the FCC specifies. And so I wanted to be sure and cite that table one that follows paragraph 42 of the FCC order, as well as the regulations themselves, and paragraph 29 that talks about the 20 centimeter separation. Also, in response to the assertion that was made here today that the FCC suggests a site evaluation be done, that these devices not be tested in a laboratory, that they should be tested on site, the FCC order speaks to this issue as well. Take a look at paragraph 72 in the FCC order, where they specifically address why it is they use laboratory-based calibration of all RF-emitting devices as opposed to doing site-specific evaluation because they feel it is more rigorous. For example, they specifically discuss in paragraph 72 that they use the maximum power that the device is capable of emitting versus where it just happens to be turned on to in location. Lastly, on the idea that the FCC has no guidance on installation, paragraph 115 speaks to this as well. And while it does say that the person using the meter is responsible for its installation, it says that the responsibility extends to assuring that the device is operating within FCC limits. So the idea that somehow this complaint is totally off the radar screen of anything the FCC looks at or regulates is just flat incorrect. Now, addressing the idea of conflict preemption, this court has specifically addressed this in Moretta versus Hillman and recognized the specific form of preemption that we are arguing in this case, and that is where state law would operate as an obstacle to the accomplishment of congressional purpose. And preemption was found in Moretta versus Hillman. That case was in turn based upon United States Supreme Court authority in Fidelity Fiduciary S&L versus De La Cuesta. That case is cited extensively in the Moretta versus Hillman opinion and in our brief, also finding preemption based upon federal regulation. And importantly, both of those cases make the point that federal regulations have the same preemptive effect as federal statutes. So the idea that there has to be something in the statute that says that state law is preempted is flatly contrary to both of these cases. Federal regulations can have the same preemptive effect. Now, the nature of the conflict here is spelled out very well in the Third Circuit Court of Appeals case of Farina versus Nokia. And I'm going to cite that largely to streamline my argument because I would largely be saying everything the court said in that opinion. And that is that the nature of the conflict here is that the federal regulatory body was largely called upon to balance competing objectives. And in the case of wireless devices, which was what Farina versus Nokia was about, those objectives involve a trade-off of efficiency, cost, and safety, and that the federal agency is uniquely able to and charged with balancing those competing objectives. Because let's face it, if your only objective was to eliminate any possibility of harm from RF radiation, you would just simply ban all wireless devices. And it is in that very balancing that the federal agency does that presents the conflict when you have tort suits being brought under state court where you're asking a jury to basically strike a different balance than the one that was struck by the regulatory agency, in this case, the FCC. And in fact, if you look in the FCC order 19-126, you will see spelled out in paragraphs 10 through 14 exactly the kind of balancing that I am talking about, where they describe taking extensive input from all kinds of different sources, including other federal regulatory agencies, in striking the balance that they struck with the regulations that are contained in 47 CFR.
Last Walker, comment. This is Justice Kelsey, if I may interrupt you briefly. In your analysis, does it matter for conflict preemption purposes as opposed to complete or field preemption purposes that there is a savings clause in the statute? Because the statute is the basis for the regs. The regs are being enabled by the statute. So if the statute has a savings clause, does that affect the scope of field preemption boundaries?
Okay, so I need to partially restate your question, Justice Kelsey, just to be sure I'm answering what you're asking. And that is, we are talking about conflict preemption here, not field preemption.
I misspoke. Please forgive me. So same question with conflict preemption. When you have a savings clause that protects it from complete preemption and protects it from field preemption, does the presence of a savings clause have an effect on how you calibrate the role of conflict preemption with regs?
Okay, I can answer that, and that is that no. Unlike a argument that is based upon field preemption, where the presence of a savings clause would be incredibly material to that analysis, when you are talking about conflict preemption, which we're talking about here, again, I would point back to Farina versus Nokia and in even this court's ruling in Moretta versus Hillman, that where there is a conflict preemption, the idea of a savings clause is doesn't alter the analysis because the legislature could never intend to save a conflict. And so conflict preemption exists largely outside of this savings clause analysis that your question presumes, Justice Kelsey.
So very briefly then, suppose the Virginia General Assembly hypothetically writes a law that says, you know what, 7 inches is not enough for us in Virginia, it's got to be 2.5 feet. Wouldn't that be something that the the preemption savings clause in the statute would find relevant? Because the preemption clause in the statute says nothing in the act shall abridge anything, dot, 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 by statute. So if the court were to interpret common law, I'm making the hypothetical up, I'm not suggesting it's right, to say, you know what, common law says it's got to be 2 feet. That's what it is. We found it in Blackstone. And you say no, but the FCC says it can be as few as 7 inches. Why wouldn't the savings clause suggest to us, well, say you got to at least have 7 inches, but if the state wants to go further to 2.5 feet, that's fine too.
Justice Kelsey, I think the answer to that question lies in the idea of, is there a conflict? And that is, there are certainly laws that can coexist and one law can layer on top of another law. There is only a conflict if you are talking about actually defeating the legislative purpose. And I would point back to the analysis in Farina versus Nokia, which has been far and away the widely accepted analysis here, that the intent of the federal law here is to strike this balance and for that balance to preempt conflicting state law actions. So
in
again,
a nutshell, the 7 inches from the FCC is the FCC saying, look, it's wrong to require 8 inches or 20 inches because the proper balance is 7 inches.
And to require more would defeat their regulatory purpose because their regulation envisions a balancing. Yes, that is what I'm saying. Let me segue in my remaining time to talk about the gravamen of the complaint here and the allegations, because there were some questions about that as well. First of all, if you look at paragraphs 23 through 38, there are extensive allegations in these complaints where smart meters are described as controversial, and they cite to irrefutable scientific evidence about the dangers of smart meters. This has nothing to do with this particular smart meter. I think the question that was raised here was whether or not there is something alleged in this complaint where this particular meter was aberrant, or were they attacking the notion of smart meters generally? And if you look at paragraphs 23 through 38, there are abundant allegations that are absolutely generic to all smart meter technology and nothing whatsoever to do with any malfunction of this particular meter. Nor does it refer to meters operating outside of FCC specs. In fact, if you look at paragraph 38, there is a specific allegation that refers to the specific absorption rate, which is itself the basis of the FCC's regulation. That is the applicable standard. And the allegation here is that regulatory standard is itself faulty because it doesn't take into account non-thermal effects.
Mr. Walk, you're about to run out of time. Address paragraph 59 in Sarah's complaint. I think it's paragraph 59, which alleges a failure to properly install, maintain, and operate the smart meter.
Yes. Thank you, Justice Bell. I will do so. First of all, the appellants themselves have downplayed the significance of paragraph 59 by saying that paragraph is merely conclusory and that what they're really talking about there can be found and the specific paragraphs they cite are 66, 68, 70, 72, and 73. Those are the paragraphs you will find in their brief that they have identified as explaining what they mean by the allegations you just asked me about. And if you look at those more detailed allegations, none of them amount to an allegation that this meter was operating. I'm sorry, I just ran out of time. May I continue?
Now go ahead and answer Justice Powell's question.
Yes, thank you. The important point I wanted to make is that the appellants themselves have pointed to the paragraphs that I highlighted as being the detail that they are talking about there. And if you look at the paragraphs they have highlighted, none of those amount to an allegation that this meter was operating at any time outside the parameters set by the FCC. As my time has expired, I will simply pray that this court will affirm the decision below in full. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Walk. Mr. Bailey, I think you had less than 5 seconds when you stepped away from the podium. Should I take that as an indication that you are through today?
The only thing I will say is I said in my brief, if you look at the Farina case, it was a case which asserted a class action that said on its face the FCC regulation was wrong, unsafe, and unfair. And so you have to take that case with a grain of salt.
All right. You have 9 seconds left. Are you through?
I'm through, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. All right. The court will be in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.